Tony Hillerman wrote 18 mysteries set on a Navajo reservation revolving around two Navajo tribal officers, Lieutenant Joe Leaphorn and Sergeant Jim Chee. The stories were not only about crimes to be solved, they were about Native American culture and the conflicts between tradition and the modern world. Hillerman died Sunday at the age of 83 in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where he lived. In Hillerman's New York Times obituary, Marilyn Stasio wrote, "In the world of mystery fiction, Hillerman was that rare figure, a best-selling author who was adored by fans, admired by fellow authors, and respected by critics." I spoke with Hillerman in 1988. We're going to listen back to an excerpt of that. I asked him first to describe the two tribal officers who were his main characters.
I think of Leaphorn as a fellow in his late 50s, sort of skinny, sort of what we call a Tuba City type Navajo, a western side of the reservation, cynical fellow, a well-read kind of guy that I would like myself.
Okay. Now, part of the story is that these two officers are searching for a missing anthropologist. It's interesting to have anthropology as the backdrop for your novel because I think for the Navajo, it's a sacrilege to dig up bones and to disinter the past.
Well, yeah, it's not something the average Navajo is going to do much of. They have an attitude grown out of very practical reasons that corpses are something to be avoided. And you get around corpses, you get sick. And the Navajos carry it one step further into the metaphysics, and being around corpses too much gets you sick psychologically, see? In other words, ghost sickness translated into more Freudian language. In the Navajo tradition, in the old beliefs, when one dies, all that remains is all of that person that was not in harmony. In other words, the good disappears, the evil lingers on.
You're not Native American yourself. How did you get to know so much about the traditions and the attitudes of Native Americans?
Two things. I got an early start by being born and raised around Potawatomi and Seminole Indians, going to an Indian school for girls, oddly enough. And then long-standing interest in religion and in the kind of people to whom metaphysical beliefs are important enough so they affect the way they live.
Now, how did you start writing about the Navajo?
Well, I started in the... I'd done a little bit of nonfiction, you know, magazine stuff, not much and not important, but I wanted to be an author, you know, have people pay attention to me and go on book tours.
Learned the hard way.
Yeah, and so I thought, well, I'm going to eventually write the, you know, War and Peace in Potawatomi County, but first I'm going to do something easier. And I'd been reading Graham Greene and Eric Ambler and Raymond Chandler, and I've been aware of what certain mystery writers can do with the mystery form. And I thought I'll do one of those. And since I don't know whether I can plot or not, I'll lean on my strength, which is description, and I will run this story against the backdrop of the Navajo people and the Navajo reservation, in whom I thought everybody must be fascinated. I was a little bit wrong about that, but that's how I got started.
It seems to me by having a Navajo main character in your novels, you ran the risk of having Native Americans say, "Who's this white guy? Well, what does he know? Who's he to be writing about Native Americans?"
I was very conscious of it, very uneasy about it. And when I went to book signings around the reservation, I'd have Navajos show up, and at first they'd say, "Hey, I thought you were a Navajo," you know, which was a high compliment. I don't worry about it now. I gradually dawned on me that the average Navajo is like the average Rotarian. He you know, he doesn't know much about his religion. By now, I've learned frankly, a heck of a lot about that side of it, and in other ways, I've never bought the idea that there's any racial differences between people. Differences are cultural.
Do you ever wish that you were Navajo?
Oh, not really. I never even thought about it. I don't see the... As I said, I've never been conscious of racial differences. Having been grown up with, Potts and Seminoles and Blackfeet, I mean, hell, we were country boys. See, we were the Potts and the Seminoles and I. We got on the school bus and carried our lunch in a sack and didn't have any money and wore bib overalls. And the other, there was us and them. I was us. I mean, us were the Indians and I and my brother. The them were the town boys, the kids who wore, you know, belt pants and low-cut shoes and had money and knew how to shoot pool and knew how to use telephones. You know, the sophisticated folks.
I think some writers who grow up poor, when they start writing, want to kind of compensate for that and end up writing things that aren't in their voice at all, but that sound like it should be in the voice of great literature. A lot of writers have told me that, and I wonder if you went through anything like that before you felt comfortable about writing in your own voice.
I had no pretensions of being the Anatole France of of Western America. I just simply, I knew what I could do. I knew I could write clearly. I knew I was good at description. I knew I could move a narrative along. I didn't know if I could develop a character. I didn't know if I could plot. I simply wanted to tell a story. I grew up in a society where my Sacred Heart, Oklahoma, had a cotton gin and two dirt roads crossed there, and there was a store there, a filling station, and sold everything from, as I said, overalls to nails to pig feed to groceries. And people come sit on the porch, and as a little boy, I'd sit there, and you learn that telling stories is valuable, you know, that people respected people who told stories.
Tony Hillerman, recorded in 1988. He died Sunday at the age of 83.